Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 197, Let's Bake Caramel Apple Galette. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the podcast all about home cooking and getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having fun. And today we've got another live cooking, or rather live baking episode for you. We're going to get in the kitchen and we're going to make a delicious, very seasonal caramel apple galette. The show notes for this episode will be over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/197. There you'll find links to some things that I mentioned in the show, books, tools, kitchen gadgets, and things like that, as well as the recipes that I cover in this episode. I'm actually going to be really covering three different things, so it's kind of a multi-purpose episode. So not only are we going to be making the finished product of the caramel apple galette, but we are also going to be making our own short crust pastry dough, and we're going to be making our own easy homemade caramel sauce. So kitchencounterpodcast.com/197 to get the info on all of that good stuff. If you'd like to send me an email, send me a note over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. You can also find me on Twitter at TKC Podcast and our Facebook group, The Kitchen Counter Coffee Break, which you can find by heading over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/group. Always interesting stuff going on in that group. You know where else you can find lots of interesting stuff is over at the Nitty Grits Podcasts, which is the network that this show belongs to out of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum down at southernfood.org. You can find my show and a handful of other really, really cool shows there as well. So please take a moment and check that out. We've got all the social media starting up too as well. So I'll put links to those in the show notes. So if you're interested, you can go take a look. All right, so I say it all the time. I'm not really much of a baker, but this recipe is totally doable. Sounds very complicated, and there's a lot going on. But if you just pay attention to the different components, each component in and of itself is not that hard to pull off. The pastry crust, pretty easy. The caramel sauce sounds intimidating, but if you just keep an eye on things, we've got a pretty easy method to follow here. And of course, the galette itself. Now, you might be asking, if you're not familiar, what's a galette? What is this thing? I've never heard of this. A galette is a French term, and it's basically, how would you describe it? It's like a pie without using a pie pan. So it's a rustic pie where you sort of freeform the crust around the filling just on a baking sheet or whatever you're baking on, without the benefit of putting it in a pie tin or a pie pan. These are also known as crostatas in Italian cuisine. So a galette, which is French, or crostata are virtually the same thing, which is, again, a rustic pie, freeform rustic pie. So it's kind of like you want to make a pie, but you don't want to go through all the hassle of perfectly trimming out your pie crust and getting it in a pan and crimping it together. And I'm a terrible pie baker, but galettes are a little bit easier because they're less fussy, less precise, and they actually turn out looking kind of cool for that very reason. So I've got a picture of it over at the show notes. You can check it out there. But we're going to make a galette today. Baking, usually not my forte, but we went to the local apple orchard for maybe the second or third time this autumn. And I tell you, I always way, way, way overpick apples. My eyes are much bigger than my stomach and everything else when I get to that apple orchard. We picked this last go round. Actually, I just went. I picked a huge bucket full of Granny Smith apples, fresh off the tree, of course, and some Cripps Pink apples as well. But they have, I don't know, probably 10 or 15 varieties of apples that are in season at different times. And there's just nothing better than a fresh apple right off the tree. And I've talked about this before. But anyway, so I end up with all of these apples. And even though we just eat apples just right out of hand a lot, sometimes we make applesauce, whatever. It's just I have way more than I knew what to do with. So I thought, well, I don't really feel like making a pie, and like a cobbler or something like that just sounds not quite fussy enough. So I landed in the happy medium with the idea of making a galette. So again, a live baking episode. You'll be there right in the kitchen with me as I go through this. We're going to start with making the pastry crust. Then we're going to make the caramel sauce. We're going to make the filling, the apple filling for the galette. And then at the very end, we're going to put it all together and toss it in the oven. All right. So without further ado, let's jump into the kitchen and put together this caramel apple galette. Enjoy. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the kitchen. Today, we're going to be making a caramel apple galette. And we're going to tackle this in three parts. We're going to be making the pastry dough for the galette. We're going to be making a caramel sauce, homemade, and then we'll work on the filling. And then in the last part of this Let's Bake episode, we'll put it all together, we'll make the galette, and pop it in the oven and see how it turns out. So we're going to do the pastry first because we need to get it into the fridge and resting for a while before we actually roll it out and use it. So we're going to do that first. And then while that's chilling and resting in the fridge, we'll do the caramel sauce and the filling. Okay, so the pastry that I make is very simple. I'm going to be using a food processor today. You can also do this by hand, but it is so fast and so easy just to do it with a food processor. That's how I like to roll. So I've got a food processor here, a fairly large size one. I don't know what the capacity is, but you know, standard size food processor. I'm also going to be using a fine mesh strainer to sift the flour. If you have a flour sifter, you could of course use that too. So the ingredients for the pastry are going to be 1.5 cups all-purpose flour, 2 tablespoons powdered sugar, confectioner sugar, 4 ounces of butter, very cold and diced into very small pieces. 4 ounces, by the way, is usually about 1 stick of butter in the U.S. 1 egg yolk and 2 tablespoons of ice water. Okay, so how we're going to do this, we're going to use the spoon to measuring cup method to measure the quantity of flour. If you take your measuring cup, jam it into the flour bag, and scoop it out and then level it off, you're probably actually getting a lot more flour than you'd need or want because it's packing in that measuring cup, and you don't want to do that. So you want to open your flour, just scoop it right out of the bag. I'm going to take the spoon, just a kitchen tablespoon, nothing too fancy, and a 1 cup measuring cup, and I'm actually going to go into the bag. I'm just going to spoon out of the bag right into the measuring cup until it sort of peaks, mounds over the rim of the cup. And then I'm going to take a flat edge and I'm going to level it off. Slide the excess back into the bag so you have a nice spooned in 1 cup of flour here, and we're going to dump that into a bowl for now. Okay, and then we're going to take a 1/2 cup measuring cup because we want 1.5 cups. So we're going to do the same thing. Just scoop it right out of the bag into the 1/2 cup measuring cup until it's mounded over. Take our flat edge. I'm just using an offset spatula. You could use the back of an IA for any other flat object you have. Okay. And into the cup it goes. I'm going to go ahead and measure out my 2 tablespoons of confectioner's sugar as well. In fact, I'm not getting too finicky with this. I'm just going to use that same tablespoon I was just using. All right, we're going to sift this right into the bowl, into the food processor. So I've got my fine mesh strainer here. I'm just going to hold it over the food processor bowl. I've already got the blade in because you don't want the flour to fall into the little chute where the blade attaches. So make sure your blade's in there. I'm going to do about 1/2 of the flour poured right into the sifter. I'm actually going to go ahead and pour 1/2 of my confectioner's sugar in there too. And now I'm just going to gently tap it. I just tap it on the middle. The top of the blade attachment actually, and it just sifts out very nicely. You can shake it back and forth. You just have to be a little careful so flour doesn't go all over the place. You want it to end up in your food processor. Okay, I'm going to do the rest. and sift that in. Now, I've got the stick of butter. I've already cut it up into pieces, and I actually put it in a little bowl and I tossed it in the freezer just to really get it chilled. You don't want it frozen solid, but you do want it nice and cold. You could freeze, you could throw the stick of butter in the freezer to where it's close to being frozen, and then you could, okay, everything's in, and then you could grate it on a large box grater or something like that, right? And then add that into the mixture. But I just went ahead and cut it into small pieces. I'm gonna get it out of the fridge here. So it's not frozen, but it's pretty close. Also got my egg yolk. You want everything really cold is the point here. It's just gonna turn out a much nicer pastry crust when all of your ingredients are cold. I've also got a little bowl of water with ice in it, so I can just measure out the ice water straight from there. Okay, so I've sifted my sugar, I've sifted my flour into the food processor. I'm gonna add my butter, my chunks of butter that I've already cut up. Gotta kind of break them up a little bit. They've sort of cooled together a little bit here. And then I'm gonna put the lid on my food processor, and we're not gonna run it full blast. We're just gonna pulse it until everything's combined and the flour takes on a crumbly texture. Doing it by hand, it's a lot more difficult to overwork your pastry. So when you're working with a food processor, you just want to pulse it. You don't want to overdo it. You just do this maybe, I don't know, a couple dozen times until your flour is looking crumbly. I'm just going to go ahead and check it. Okay, I think we're in pretty good shape here. I'm going to take the lid off. I'm going to go ahead now and add my egg yolk, which has been in the fridge nice and cool. It's so cool it almost doesn't come out of my bowl. And of the 2 tablespoons of ice water, I'm going to add about 1.5 tablespoons here to start. I don't want to add it all in case I need to add more later. I don't want it to get too wet and doughy. So what we're going to do, so I just scoop out 1 tablespoon. And then about 1/2 tablespoon. Put the lid back on and pulse it. And we want to get to the point to where everything is just starting to cling together in clumps. We're not making a perfect dough in the food processor. We're just getting everything combined. Now before, when I was processing it, everything just kind of stayed nice and granular and powdery. Now I've got stuff as I'm pulsing it. It's building up sort of around the wall of the food processor. So I'm actually gonna take my spatula and just knock everything down. I'm gonna add a little bit more water too. I don't think I quite have enough, so that's okay. Little, about 1/2 tablespoon of ice water. And pulse it. Now this pastry is great for sweet stuff. If you want to use it for savory, like pot pies or empanadas or something like that, you could use the same recipe and just substitute out the confectioner sugar and instead perhaps add in a little bit of sea salt to make it a more savory pastry. Starting to clump together. Okay, perfect. Still very granular, still very kind of gloppy, but we're going to go ahead and turn this out onto a lightly floured surface. Very lightly floured surface. It's not going to be very sticky dough. It'll be relatively dry dough. And we're just going to knead it together a little bit until we get a nice, firm pastry dough. So I'm going to take the blade out. Got a few things sticking to it there. I'm just going to turn this straight over onto my surface. And it's going to come out kind of crumbly, but that's okay. I'm just going to grab it, and I'm just going to put it together into a ball with my hand, give it a few kneads, and it really doesn't take much. You don't want to heat this dough up with your hand, so don't knead too long, and you don't want to overwork it either. Really, we're talking like 20 seconds of kneading is all this is going to take. I'm already done. I've already got a pastry dough that I can go ahead and form into a little ball. We're going to go ahead and pop that into the fridge and wrap it in plastic and then pop it into the fridge. And it's going to rest in there for at least 30 minutes. You could make this the night before. You could even freeze this for, tightly wrapped and then put into something like a freezer bag. You could freeze it for about a month if you wanted to as well. In fact, this recipe that I'm making is really going to make enough for two pie crusts or two galettes. So I'm going to put this in the fridge, let it rest, and then when I go to use it, I'm going to probably wrap up half of it and throw it in the freezer, and then I'll have some pastry crusts for Thanksgiving or something like that that I can use. So that's it. I've got the pastry crust. First step done. Into the fridge, and we'll give it about 30 minutes. Easy. That's the easiest pastry crust I've come across. It's the easiest pastry crust I know how to make, and it's delicious. All right, let's move on to the caramel sauce. So caramel sauce can be a finicky, fussy thing to make at home. That's why a lot of people don't bother with it, and they just go out and buy a bottle of their favorite brand of caramel sauce, which is fine. But homemade isn't that difficult. And I actually, if you follow a couple of tips, and I use the America's Test Kitchen or the Cook's Illustrated version of caramel sauce. I'm actually getting this particular recipe out of their Baking Illustrated book, which is a fantastic resource for home bakers. Highly, highly recommended. So what's caramel sauce? It's essentially granulated sugar that's been cooked until it turns a dark amber color. That's it. We add a little bit of water to this to help the sugar dissolve and to cook evenly. To give it its creamy sauciness, we're going to add some cream to it. We're also going to add a little bit of salt, vanilla extract, and lemon juice. So let's get started on the sauce. As it's going, we have a little bit of standing and staring at the sauce time. I'll bring up a couple of tips and tricks for the caramel sauce. A couple of things that usually trip up a homemade caramel sauce that we're going to try to avoid by using this America's Test Kitchen version. So specific ingredients, 1/2 cup water, 1 cup granulated sugar, 1 cup whipping cream, or you could use heavy whipping cream as well, 1/8 teaspoon of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla extract, and 1/2 teaspoon of fresh lemon juice. This actually requires a couple of saucepans. It's a little more equipment intensive than most caramel sauce recipes I've seen, but I feel it's also a little more foolproof. So I really, really like this method. So in a small saucepan, I have the 1 cup of whipping cream and the salt, and I'm actually going to turn that just under medium. I want that to heat up to roughly a simmer, because towards the end of the sugar cooking, we're going to combine the cream into the caramel sauce that we've got started. So I'm going to turn that on. I don't want to bring it to a boil, so I want to keep an eye on it, but I do want to bring it to just a simmer. Now, in a larger 2-quart saucepan with a lid, and it's important you use a large enough saucepan because, as we'll find out later, when you go to combine the cream and the caramel together, it will bubble furiously. And if you're using too small of a pan, you could have a scalding hot caramel sauce accident as it blows out over the top. But if you're using like a 2-quart or larger saucepan, it should work fine. All right, I'm going to take the lid off. So the method, very important for this method to work, is you put the 1/2 cup of water into your saucepan. I'm going to go ahead and turn this up on high because I want to bring this to a boil. Now I'm going to take my 1 cup of sugar and I'm going to very, very, very carefully pour it into the saucepan, into the middle of the water. And I'm going to do it carefully because what I don't want to do is have any of the sugar end up touching the sides of the saucepan. So I basically want to pour it in the middle, make a little mound of sugar so none of it is touching the sides of the saucepan. So don't just toss it in. I'll explain why in a second after we get this going. So I'm going to pour this in very carefully, very slowly. Okay, so it's in the water. It's starting to spread out. The water is absorbing it, but the water is above the sugar and the sugar is not touching any of the sides, which is great. Now I'm going to put a lid on this And we want to bring this to a boil with the lid on. As soon as it comes to a boil, we're going to take the lid off and let it continue to boil and cook. And the process here is it's going to turn just straw colored or tan colored. Then we're going to turn the heat down and let it finish cooking to more of a darker amber color. That's where we're really building that caramel flavor. That's all probably going to take about 6 or 7 minutes. All right, so we're bringing that to a boil. Now, there's two things really that generally foil a good homemade caramel sauce. One is crystallization. It's not the end of the world, but it's kind of a hassle. You'll see a lot of recipes that say, stir the sugar into the water. If you get any granules of sugar up on the sides of the pot, you need to take a pastry brush, wet it with some water, and brush down the sides to get those crystals down. Because if you have crystals of sugar, this is an interesting thing. If you have crystals of sugar that are clinging to the inside side of the pot and they're not being dissolved, it can actually cause your entire caramel sauce to crystallize and become gritty, grainy. I've even seen caramel sauces that basically turn into like hard candy almost in the pan. So you want to avoid doing that. One of the ways you can avoid doing that is avoid stirring and not getting any sugar on the sides of the pot. And this America's Test Kitchen recipe is one of the few that I've found that allow you to make caramel sauce without any stirring. Now, I do have a silicone whisk and a silicone spoon at the ready here for when I combine the cream and the sauce in the caramel, but I'm not even going to stir this thing until that stage. So literally bringing this to a boil with the lid on, we're going to let it cook down to caramel color without stirring it once. That way you don't have to mess around and worry about sugar granules getting on the sides of the saucepan and causing an issue. Now, the lid that I have is fantastic because it's a glass top lid and I can actually look down into my saucepan. I see that it's really starting to come to a boil. I am not going to jiggle, jostle, stir this at all. I'm just going to go ahead and take the lid off and let it keep boiling. You can probably hear that. Now, I'm actually just might put a timer on for fun. I'm going to put a timer on for 6 minutes because when I get to talking on these Let's Bake or Let's Cook episodes, sometimes I lose track of time. So it's crystal clear now in color. We're going to keep an eye on that. And as soon as it starts turning straw colored or tan colored, we are going to turn the heat down to medium because we don't want it to burn. Now, if you're using a candy thermometer, you at that stage would be about 300 degrees Fahrenheit where it was starting to turn tan color. You would turn the temperature down at that point and finish cooking to about 350 degrees, which would be that darker amber color. Again, I'm just doing this by eyeball and nose. You know, you can smell when things are going a little quick. But here's the thing. Once it turns to light tan and we turn the temperature down, I am not going to take my eyes off of this because it is going to cook to dark amber very, very quickly, maybe in a matter of another minute. So I do not want to take my eyes off of it at that stage because it will go too fast. And I don't want to burn it or scorch because then we have to start completely over from scratch. Let me make sure my cream is heating up. It looks like it's just coming to a simmer. I've got the lid on, another glass lid in the small saucepan. I can see it's just starting to smile at me. The surface of the cream is just starting to move, so that's great. Now, the other thing we already talked about that screws up homemade caramel sauce is burning it, so just keep a very, very, very close eye on this. I've seen a lot of other caramel recipes that actually combine all of the ingredients together at the beginning, and you cook them and end up with caramel sauce. I've never made caramel that way. It might turn out fine. It sounds fairly easy. A lot of those recipes too include butter and even brown sugar instead of white granulated sugar. That's almost approaching more of a butterscotch than a caramel in my mind, but we're doing it this way because we want a really pure caramel flavor. A lot of folks also do not add vanilla, but I do find a little bit of vanilla does really elevate the flavor of the caramel sauce. Now, this caramel sauce is going to be one where we are drizzling over the apples in the galette. I'm going to turn my cream down. I don't want it to burn. We're going to drizzle it over the apples before we bake it and also after we bake it, just to give it some really heavy-duty caramel flavor. So let's see. It's been boiling for about 3 minutes now. I'm taking a look at it. It's still pretty clear. There's really not any color. Now, if I look on the sides of my saucepan, above where the sugar syrup solution is boiling, I do see some things that could be mistaken for sugar granules on the side of the pot, but they're not sugar granules. They're just kind of splatterings of the liquid. At this point, the sugar is pretty much dissolved inside the liquid, so they're just sticky little globs. They're not going to cause your caramel sauce to go granular and seize up. By the way, if that does ever happen to you while you're making a caramel sauce, if you get the granular look or if it's gritty, just add a little bit more water, like maybe another, you know, couple of tablespoons, maybe a quarter cup. Stir it up, bring it back to a boil, and that should dissolve your granules. The problem is you're going to be stirring it, and then you might be introducing more granules up on the side. It's kind of a vicious cycle, so I try to avoid even getting there in the first place. That's why I like this America's Test Kitchen method, because I'm not even touching it. I'm not even stirring it. I'm just letting it cook with a watchful eye. Okay, it's looking good. Really hot and bubbly. This is, again, I'm not using a candy thermometer, but I would think we're probably approaching, oh, I have 1 minute left on my timer. We're probably approaching, 275 or something like that. I'm just starting to see the faintest tint of color coming into it right now. So we're getting close to where we're going to turn the temperature of the burner down to medium. The great thing about this caramel sauce too is you don't have to use it for this particular recipe. You can use it for anything. Ice cream, stirring it into your caramel apple cider, whatever. All right, I see we've got some tan color moving in, so I'm gonna move this down to medium. My burner runs a little hot, so I'm gonna go just a touch lower. And now, it's gonna be like another minute is all, so I'm keeping a close eye on this. Get a trivet out because I'm gonna move this off of the heat as soon as we get a nice dark, there's the timer, I'll just turn that off. We get a nice dark amber color. I'm gonna pull this off the burner. And then we're gonna mix in, whoa, hello. We're gonna mix in our hot cream mixture. Okay, I would say we are pretty much there. I'm gonna pull this off the heat. Now listen to this when I pour this hot cream in. I'm gonna pour about half of it in. Can you hear that? Whew, my glasses are steaming up. I'm gonna go ahead and give it a second, let it subside a little bit. And then I'm gonna get in there with my silicone whisk and give it a stir. Okay. And then I'm gonna go ahead, whew, I needed a longer handled whisk. It's very steamy and hot. Give that a stir. Now I'm gonna go ahead and pour the rest of my cream mixture in. It's gonna bubble more again, but it should subside fairly quickly. Turn my burner off. Give this a stir. Now I'm also gonna add in my lemon juice and my vanilla extract and stir that in as well. Now we just stir it until everything is nice and incorporated and smooth looking. I've got this beautiful amber-colored caramel sauce happening right before my eyes, not grainy at all. Didn't have to stir it one bit until we added the cream mixture. All right, this is stirred up. It's calming down quite nicely. And I'm just gonna set this aside on a trivet for a little while to calm down and cool down. I'm gonna then probably transfer it to a glass jar to let it cool down further. I think I washed a glass jar. Let me find out. Yes. Okay. We'll have that ready to go. And that was our caramel sauce. So it is going to thicken as it cools.
We want it to be relatively cool when we use it because we don't want it just to be like this thin, runny sauce. We want it to have a little bit of body, especially when we take the galette out of the oven and want to garnish it or finish it off with a little extra caramel sauce. So I'm going to move this to the other side of the counter and let that cool down a bit. So that was caramel sauce. Really easy. I love the America's Test Kitchen version. Man, it's so simple. Probably not as simple as running down to the store and buying a bottle of your favorite caramel sauce, but about as simple as it could be if you wanted to make it at home. All right, let's work on the filling. And then after that, we'll come back and we'll put this caramel apple galette together. All right, we're back. And to recap what we've done so far for this caramel apple galette, we've made the pastry. It's in the fridge, chilling out right now. It's probably been in there for about 15 minutes. We were shooting for about 30. So we'll probably take a break and let that catch up after we work on the filling. We've also made the caramel sauce, and we have it sitting in the saucepan off to the side, cooling down. In a few minutes, I'm going to transfer it over to a jar so it can cool down even further. Oh, just smells so good. I could just drink that. Not now, because it would probably burn my face off. But so good, so good. Now we're going to work on the filling. So this is an apple, caramel apple galette. So obviously we need apples. I happen to have a huge pile of beautiful, freshly picked Granny Smith apples. I love using Granny Smith's for apple baked goods because they're tart. They're a little bit sweet. They're not incredibly juicy, so they don't get runny and fall apart. They hold their shape very nicely. So whether you have fresh, hand-picked from the tree or store-bought, either one will work just fine. You can use other firm apples as well, like Honeycrisps, I think, would probably work pretty well if you like those. They're quite a bit sweeter than a Granny Smith, so that's why I like using the Grannies. So for this, we need, depending on the size of your apples, I have very large apples. I mean, these are about twice the size you would find in the grocery store, so I'm going to only use two of these. But you want to use probably 2 to 3 large apples. Again, I'm using Granny Smith. Then the other parts of the ingredients here, we're going to be using 1/4 cup of packed light brown sugar, 1.5 tablespoons of all-purpose flour, 2 teaspoons of lemon juice. That's primarily to keep the apple slices from browning as they're sitting around. And then 1 teaspoon of cinnamon, 1/8 teaspoon of allspice, and 1/8 teaspoon of cloves. Those are my preferred spices. You could use whatever you'd like if you'd rather have nutmeg in there, say, instead of cloves or something like that. Go nuts. But, you know, we're looking for the warm fall spices, those spices that go really, really well with apples. Now, I want to talk about my apple peeling and coring method here. If you know, I've got one of those apple peelers and cores where you stick it on this contraption and you turn the crank and it pushes the apple around in a circle and it peels it and cores it and slices it all at once. If I were making something like applesauce and I needed to do that to, you know, a couple of dozen apples or more, I would use that method. I'm only, you know, doing like 2 or 3 apples here, so I'm not going to fuss around with all that. And you know what? I don't even own an apple corer. I thought I did. I searched all of my hidey holes for kitchen gadgets and I cannot find an apple corer, which is fine because I never use it anyway. There's a much easier method, in my opinion, to coring an apple for this particular type of a method, and it's less wasteful, actually. So first of all, I want to peel it. I just take a vegetable peeler. If you have one of those, you know, just something you'd peel a carrot with or something. I hold the apple in my left hand. I start at the bottom of the apple. You know, hold it sideways. Start at the bottom of the apple. I just put the vegetable peeler on it, and I just rotate the apple with my left hand while essentially guiding the apple peeler, you know, along in a circle. If you're really good at it, if you practice, you can take a peel off an apple all in one long peel. But really, it only takes, I don't know, less than a minute to peel an apple. And like I said, we're only doing a couple of apples here, so it's not that big of a deal. And you know, if you leave a little bit of peel here and there, a little spot or two, don't fuss with it. That's totally fine. I mean, we're not looking for perfection here. We're just looking for a relatively well-peeled apple. Okay. All right, so I've got a peeled apple here. Now, the way I core an apple, and I slice up apples for something like a pie or a galette, is I'm just going to set the apple back down so it's, I'm looking at the top where the stem was, where I removed the stem. I'm just going to take my knife, I'm going to cut the apple down in half, essentially cutting right through the middle. So now it's split in half as it has exposed both sides of the apple. Now I can see where the seeds are in the core, I can see where the stem was, and I can see where the flower of the apple was. So I take my knife, and I'm just going to cut a little V out where the flower is at the bottom, because I don't want to eat that. Okay, and I'm going to cut a little V out at the top where the stem was. Super easy. And then to core it, I'm actually just going to take, I have this, you could use a melon baller, but I have a tablespoon measuring spoon that's like, looks like a melon baller. It's kind of that shape. And I just get in here, see if you can hear it, and I just scoop out the core. Bam, done. I'm going to do the same thing the other side of the apple. I'm going to cut out where the flower was at the bottom, cut out where the stem was at the top, notch a little V in there, pop it out, and core it. Oh, if I leave a little more of the core in than I wanted, I just go back in and clean it out with the spoon. So there, I've just peeled and cored an apple with minimal waste. Now I'm going to set them down. I want to cut these into relatively thin slices, okay? Not paper thin. We're not really caring about knife skills all that much, but I set it flat side down, the half of the apple. I'm going to be cutting from top to bottom. I'm looking straight down at the apple. First thing I'm going to do is the cook always gets a little piece of apple, so I'm just going to cut. I don't want to cut little slivers off the edge, so I'm going to cut, you know, maybe a half inch or a quarter inch off the side of that apple because I don't want that. I'll try it. Good Lord, those are good apples. Mm. So now I've got a nice flat side of the apple to start with. I'm just going to cut. You know, you don't want paper thin because that's just a pain to cut. And you don't want super thick because they're not going to cook through. So, I mean, I'm looking at like, I don't know, eighth inch thick maybe. And you probably hear that I'm not like cutting through this like some Iron Chef because, you know, who cares? Just cutting slices. Leave a little piece at the other side. Now I'm going to toss this in the bowl. Okay, I'm going to take the other half of the apple, do the same thing. I have these beautiful half moon looking apple slices now that I'm going to throw into a bowl. These apples, like I said, are so big. I think I'm only going to need two of them. You're looking for about 5 cups. You know, these are hard to measure in cups because they're big slices, but something around the equivalent of like volume-wise 5 cups of apples, which 2 of these is going to do it for me. Okay. I've already cut up my other apple, so I didn't have to waste time doing it while we're talking. So now I'm going to throw all of the apples into a bowl. I just have a metal bowl here, mixing bowl. Okay. The apples are in. Now I am going to toss in my two teaspoons of lemon juice. Give everything a stir. Let's get the apples kind of coated there with that. And now I'm going to toss in my my mixture of flour, light brown sugar, the cinnamon cloves, and allspice. And I'm just going to toss it all together until it's nice and coated on all of the apples. The reason we put flour in is essentially the same reason you would put flour into an apple pie filling. So as the apples bake and lose whatever juice they have, you don't want it to become a runny mess, right? You want it to stay somewhat thick. And that's what the flour is going to do for you. It's going to thicken up as it absorbs the moisture that comes out of the apples. Make sure you don't have a runny galette. Okay. Fairly well stirred up. I'm going to cover it with plastic wrap. Got a piece laying here. Ready to go. Okay. And we'll go ahead and put those into the fridge while we wait for our pastry crust to finish resting, which should only be a few more minutes. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. And we're going to put this galette together. We're going to take the pastry crust out of the fridge. We're going to roll it out and assemble this and then get it into the oven. All right. See you in a minute. All right, we're back. We are going to bring this salted caramel apple galette home now. So what I've done is I took a little break. I've let the pastry dough finish resting in the fridge. I've transferred my caramel sauce to a jar with a lid, and I've actually put it in the freezer just to kind of get it cooling down quickly. I wouldn't ordinarily do that. I just throw it in the fridge after it cooled down to room temperature, so I could use it. But I thought I don't want to fuss around with waiting around for that. I have one of those condiment dispensers. It looks like a ketchup dispenser or something you'd see at a diner. I'm going to put the caramel sauce in there to use it to work with. All right, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to preheat my oven to 375. I'm going to line a baking sheet with some parchment paper. I don't know about you, but I love the crumpled parchment paper technique where you take out your parchment paper. You know, it's nice and crisp and flat, and it doesn't fit into anything nicely, and you crumple it up. Do a ball. You don't have to go crazy or mutilate it. But then when you unfold it, it's all crinkly and crumply, and then it'll fit into like any shape you want. You can fit it into bowls, into casserole dishes. But I just put this in the baking dish, push the sides, and it just sits like almost perfectly in shape down in the baking dish. So much easier than like cutting it or trying to measure it when you tear it. Works like a champ. All right, so we've got our baking dish at the ready. I've got my work area where I am going to roll out the dough. Get a rolling pin out. We have one of these cool rolling pins. I think my wife got it for Christmas. And it's one of those rolling pins that has the guides on it for thickness. So on each end, you unscrew. I think I might have talked about this before. But you unscrew this. It's like dumbbells where you can put different weights on them. You unscrew this thing off the end. You find the thickness that you want. They're different colored. I don't know what thickness I want. And then let's see, let's do 1/6. Let's see what that looks like. 4 millimeters, 1/6 of an inch. That looks pretty thin. Yeah, that might be too thin. Let's do 6 millimeters. And what it does is as you're rolling it out, it won't let you go any, it won't let you push down any more than 6 millimeters away. So your crust will be nicely even all the way around. So let me just switch up the other end here. And if that's too thick, we'll just go to the next smaller one. I know this seems very finicky and I should just use a regular rolling pin, but I got it at hand, so why not? All right, I got my little 6 millimeter guides on there. Move the rest of them away. Unwrap my pastry crust. I'm going to eyeball it and use a pastry scraper, bench pastry knife, just to cut it about in half, more or less. Oh, beautiful, beautiful. A galette is not fussy. It doesn't have to be perfectly round. We're not lining a pie pan. We're actually just kind of going to freeform this. So it doesn't even have to be perfectly round. The edges don't have to be perfectly nice. But, you know, you can trim and you can make it as nice as you'd like. It's not necessary for it to work. All right. I'm going to lightly flour my rolling surface. You don't want to overdo the flour. This isn't a real sticky dough, so it shouldn't be too big of a deal. You just don't want to overdo the flour because you don't want to make it a floury. You don't want to dry out your dough with too much flour. All right, I've formed this into a disc. I'm just going to start rolling it. Oops. Just going to start rolling it out from the middle of the dough to the outside edges, not back and forth, to the middle to the outside in different directions to sort of keep the round shape of this thing. Remember, I'm not going to be able to go any thinner than 6 millimeters on this because I got the guides on it, which is so cool. And I got one of these silicone roll mats that I'm working on instead of just like my granite or a wood slab. What's cool about this is it's got circular guides and rulers all around the edges. But the circular guides will tell you as you're rolling it out how big your round is. Right now I've rolled it out to 6 inches round. I'm going to try to go maybe to about a regular 9-inch size. Let's see if I can get there with this thickness. You know, I'm not a baker, so I don't even know if 6 millimeters off the top of my head is really that thick. I don't know. It doesn't feel like it. I think I'm about there, and I think I'm barely bigger than a 6-inch round, and this is going to be pretty thick. So I'm gonna ratchet it down to the next size. Now I know. Should have just done it the old-fashioned way. But you know, I gotta have my gadgets. Don't need an apple core, but I definitely need a rolling pin with guides. Okay. See how this baby looks. We got it down to the 4 millimeter. Yeah, now we're making some progress. So we're gonna roll this out, and then we'll probably let it just rest for a few minutes. Just so I'm about at 9 inches now. Maybe we'll try to take it to the 10. Nice little galette that'll serve a few people. Now the way we're gonna do this is we're gonna assemble our apple filling in the middle. And now as a pie, you know, you'd have a rims and a pie pan and all that kind of stuff, and a top crust and a bottom crust. With the galette, we just have one crust. We put our good stuff in the middle, and then we just fold the edges up and around. We don't enclose it. It's not like a dumpling or something where we're gonna, you know, pinch off the top so it's shut. There's gonna be an opening in the middle where you see all the apple goodness, but the edges will be folded up to give it sort of a rustic pie crust edge, if that makes sense, without using a pan. Okay, I think we've got this thing about rolled. I'm gonna go ahead and turn it over carefully. This is such a great pastry. It's not splitting, it's not breaking apart or anything. The edges are a little haggard, but you know, it's a galette. It's rustic. It doesn't need to be perfectly coiffed pie crust. I love these guides because I can just push down as hard as I want on the rolling pin, and I know it's not gonna squish down the dough any thinner than the 4 millimeter thickness. Okay, beautiful. We're about at 10 inches. So I think what I'm gonna do now is I'm going to transfer this over to the parchment paper on my baking sheet. And I think I'll put the galette together there. That way I don't have to try to transfer it after I've assembled it onto the baking sheet. Beautiful. We're gonna bring our apples that have been languishing, that have been chilling out in their cinnamon, brown sugar, flour mixture. You'll notice if they've been in there for a while, the longer they're in there, you'll notice more and more liquid at the bottom of the bowl. When we put the apples into this galette, you don't want that liquid to go with it because it'll just make for a runny mess. So really try to get your apples out without scooping up a bunch of that. And in fact, I'm just gonna use my hands. Wash my hands. I'm just gonna use my hands to scoop up the apples and arrange them nicely in the middle. I wanna leave about 2.5 inches or so on all sides. So if I've got a 10-inch diameter pie crust or a galette crust here, that means I'm gonna be working with about 6 inches in the middle around to put my apples. And I'm just gonna get my hands dirty here with the apples and sort of pull them out. I'm actually going to try to arrange them not just like in a haphazard pile. Well, actually, I don't know how I'm going to try to arrange them, but I'm just gonna try to get them in there so they look kind of nice, like in a pinwheel maybe or something like that. You know, those two big apples, it's really almost too much. I mean, you don't want to heap up your apples. So like an apple pie where you just have them like exploding out the top practically, you're not really aiming for that because you do need to fold your crust of the galette over. So, you know, use your best judgment to kind of get them where you think they need to be. That looks great. I'm gonna wash my hands again, get them nice and dry. The oven just finished preheating. Get my hands nice and dry. And then we're going to work on folding the edges of our galettes up and over the edges of our apples, and we'll see how we've done. Now, we're gonna start with one side, fold it over. We're gonna go next to it, fold it over. And where those two parts overlap, we're gonna kind of pinch the crust together, right, to sort of seam it up. It's sort of, well, I'll show you the picture when I get it folded up. It'll make sense. This is not a very huge galette, so you could definitely, if you were so inclined, you could definitely make a larger one. And yeah, and lo and behold, my apples are poking out a little bit. Oops. This is a perfect galette that I've made for probably four big portions, you know, with apple, with vanilla ice cream or something like that. Now, two things. I want to take my caramel sauce, which is kind of cooled down. I think we're in a good enough place. I can drizzle some on. So I'm going to do some right on the apples in the middle. And the good news is the caramel sauce is going to go over the entire thing when I pull the apples out and or when I pull the galette out anyway. So now the other thing I want to do is do an egg wash on the crust, which I've got already made and sitting in the fridge. It's basically one whole egg and a tablespoon of 2% milk beaten together. So I'm gonna do an egg wash around the crust. You know, I had enough apples. I probably could have made two. I probably should have made two. And then I wouldn't have had a crust left over, but that's okay. Okay, it is brushed up. Now, we're gonna throw this baby in the oven, let it cook for about 35 minutes. See how that looks. So we're gonna pop it in. And we'll check back when it's ready to go. All right, we're back. I am ready to take this galette out of the oven. Just taking down the final seconds. There it is. I have had this in a 375 degree oven for about, I checked it at 35 minutes. It wasn't quite ready, so I put it back in for about another 4 minutes. And now I think it's looking pretty good. It's ready to come out. So let's see what we have. Okay. Oh, it looks nice. It actually opened up a little bit, so you can see a few more of the apples in there, which is nice. The edges are nice and brown. It's got some bubbly goodness in the middle, even kind of leaked out a little bit, some of the caramel in one of the spots, but it smells amazing. It looks amazing. Wow. I'm going to let this cool down for about 15 minutes or so before I drizzle the rest of the caramel sauce on it, because I don't want the caramel sauce just to hit the hot galette, turn runny, and turn into a blob. I want it to be able to see the caramel and drizzles nicely. So yeah, that's what we're going to do. We're going to let this thing cool down. I'm sure future Roger will tell you how it all turned out at the end of the show. So thanks for heading in the kitchen and baking a caramel apple galette with me. It was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed it and learned something. Hey everybody, I hope you enjoyed that episode. That was a lot of fun to put that galette together. As I mentioned, the show notes over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/197 will have the recipes for the crust, the caramel sauce, and the galette itself. So head over there if you want to check those out. You know, I didn't mention at the beginning, I probably should have. If you want to cut down on the effort here, you can certainly buy a store-bought pie crust. You could certainly go pick up some caramel sauce and it would be, you know, and make the galette and then just use those other two store-bought components. It would be perfectly fine. And I'm not going to tell anybody, and it'll look great, it'll taste great, and it'll save you a little bit of effort. But if you want to make everything from scratch, now you've got it right at hand, and you know what that's going to look like when you get in your own kitchen. And by the way, it turned out fantastic. Heat it back up with a little bit of vanilla ice cream. Oh, just absolutely perfect. Exactly what I would think of a comforting dessert treat
in autumn. So yeah, this is definitely a really, really pretty dessert, and it could wow maybe your Halloween or your Thanksgiving crowd. All right, I've kept you a long time today, so we're going to wrap this up. Thank you so much for jumping in the kitchen with me as we made some yummy baked treats today. Remember to head over to southernfood.org if you want to check out the other Nitty Grits podcasts on the Nitty Grits network. And I hope you're enjoying your fall season. And until next time, I am Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking and baking. Thank you.